European leaders arriving in Brussels for a crucial meeting on Ukraine. At the start of the crisis, they had surprised many with unity and strong sanctions. But a sixth package of measures, including an oil ban, has been stalled for nearly a month. Some expressed optimism the deadlock can be broken.
There is high chances of being passed through, and the unity should be maintained in the European Council, as we have done up to now, so that's important to continue.
But such an upbeat assessment was soon dashed by the EU leader with the friendliest relations with Vladimir Putin. Hungary's recently re-elected Prime Minister Viktor Orban has for weeks been the one to oppose the oil ban. To win him over, it's now being proposed that to begin with, the ban will only apply to oil that comes on ships from Russia, not supplies that are delivered by pipeline. But Mr. Orban told reporters there was no deal yet.
The problem is, you know, that we are in a very difficult situation. Basically because of the irresponsible behaviour of the Commission.
The head of the Commission didn't address such criticism, but she did suggest there wouldn't be a breakthrough during this meeting.
We are not there yet, but it has matured for sure. My expectations are low that it will be solved in the next 48 hours, but I'm confident that thereafter there will be a possibility.
The European leaders were joined by video link from Kyiv by President Zelensky, a show of unity and solidarity for Ukraine. But all that is rather overshadowed by the continuing impasse on sanctions. James Bayes, Al Jazeera, Brussels.
Ukraine's foreign minister says Kyiv is frustrated by the slow pace of negotiations.
You know well how we are tired in Ukraine of some special decisions, half measures, special approaches, some models which some European capitals are constantly inventing for Ukraine. We need clear legal confirmation that Ukraine is part of the European integrational project, and such confirmation will be giving Ukraine the status of candidate.
Meanwhile, a French journalist has been killed by Russian shelling in Ukraine. Frédéric Leclerc-Kimov was a reporter with BFM TV. The French foreign minister, who is in Ukraine, has called an investigation into his killing in Luhansk. The French president, Emmanuel Macron, also paid tribute by tweeting the following. Frédéric Leclerc-Kimov was in Ukraine to show the reality of the war. He was aboard a humanitarian bus alongside civilians forced to flee to escape Russian bombs, and he was fatally shot. Zain Bazravi is in Kyiv. He has more on the circumstances surrounding the French journalist's death.
We started hearing reports of a journalist that had been killed just a few hours ago, and now we can name him. French President Emmanuel Macron has named the gentleman who was killed earlier today, and his name is Frédéric Leclerc-Imhoff. And the circumstances of his death are tragic, it has to be said. He was accompanying a rescue effort in the Luhansk region. We're not sure exactly where as yet. It hasn't been confirmed, but we are hearing some social media chatter to suggest that it was evacuations being carried out from the city of Severodonetsk, which has been under siege by Russian forces for some time. During that rescue operation, the head of the Luhansk region made a statement about the incident that happened. He says that the evacuation has been officially stopped. Russians fired at a car that was going to pick up people. A French journalist was killed. An armored evacuation vehicle was picking up 10 people from the area that came under enemy fire. Shrapnel and shells pierced the armored vehicle that was being used, and a fatal wound to the neck was received by this accredited French journalist who was covering the evacuation at the time. So certainly a very tragic incident. It brings the death toll of journalists in this conflict since the Russian invasion began to approximately 24. That is the latest figure we have. Pales in comparison, it has to be said, to the 9,000 estimated civilian deaths that have taken place. Some estimates put that number much higher, but it does indicate how difficult and dangerous it is to report this war. It's only been going on since February.
Well, let's take a quick look at the state of play in Ukraine's front lines at the moment. The areas in red are controlled by Russia and its separatist allies. The governor of Luhansk says Russian forces have entered the city of Severodonetsk. There's also heavy fighting in these areas as Ukrainian troops hold back Russian attempts to encircle forces in Donetsk. It's a different story in the south, where Ukraine has managed to launch a counteroffensive to recapture Kherson. We can speak now to Hannah Schelest, who is a Security Studies Programme Director at the Foreign Policy and Security think tank Ukrainian PRISM. She joins us from Odessa in Ukraine. Thank you for speaking to us on the programme. The focus of the battle, as we're hearing is in the east right now, in Severodonetsk. The Russians appear to be throwing everything they have at it. They do hold an overwhelming advantage when it comes to weapons and firepower. How long do you think the Ukraine can hold them off as things stand?
Definitely. The last week, the fighting intensified significantly on the east front. That is mostly in the Lugansk and Donetsk regions. And it is very difficult to say now what will be the exact time that Ukraine can stay like this, because we can't say that Russians really advanced. In some territories, they advanced more, like in Lugansk. In some territories, they've been advancing and then thrown back. So the fighting is really just in the midst of what is happening. At the same time, this week and the next week, Ukraine is expecting quite a significant supply of the heavy weapons that's been already announced by the United States of America the last week, the $40 billion support being signed by the president. And over there, we are expecting that type of the weapons that Ukraine really needs now for the counter-offense. That's multi-launch rocket systems, that the drones, the combat drones that Ukraine can use over there. And the supply of these weapons can significantly change the operative situation on the ground.
What are you actually hearing about whether you are going to get these weapons and when? Because we've heard Kyiv express frustration again and again on the slow pace of a variety of things, for example, the sanction talks and demanding more weapons. Do you feel that Europe and the US is addressing your concerns?
I would not unite all countries together, because we have really very different situation. Some countries, even like the United States of America, supplying the weapons very often in 72 hours from the decision made to the actual being already in the unit on the ground. The question is that when you supply javelins, it can be done easier than when you supply the multi-launch rocket system. You just imagine the sizes and the logistics, especially in the times of war. At the same time, we definitely have the problems like with Germany, when it's been announced more than a month ago that they're supplying us with the necessary armored vehicles, and we are still expecting them on the ground. At the same time, Lithuania or Estonia is supplying as soon as possible what they have, and even Australia, the latest decisions about the vehicles that we received from them, we received them literally in 4 days from announcement. And you can imagine what is the logistics from Australia to Ukraine. So I would not say that this frustration is general against all the partners. It's definitely against the individual partners. And Ukraine understands that we need as soon as possible everything. That's why we are in such a demanding mood, because each day it means that each day of the suffering of people on the ground.
We're hearing the term war of attrition being used to describe Russia's strategy in parts of the east. What is your understanding of that term, and what do you think the logic is behind Russia's tactics?
Definitely, you could see it for the last 3 months, especially in towns like Mariupol or Kharkiv, that Russia is trying just to destroy everything what is there. There are several reasons for this. First of all, is to bring fear for people on the ground. So the people would not support any of the military actions. And those who can oppose on the ground, like guerrillas or partisans, they would be just leaving the territory because they understand the severe actions and consequences. The same is for journalists. Journalists are usually not allowed to be there where the very heavy fightings are happening for their security reasons. But also because the Russian Federation currently demonstrated that their armed forces are not so strong as they promoted them. So on the north, they were not able to have a close fight, and they started to use the last months as much as possible the long-range missiles that are very destructive. You can imagine the Furigan of Brad or others. What are the consequences of these missiles? And they also use a lot in eastern Ukraine the thermal missiles and the cluster missiles. So those that most of the countries even prohibited for the use, especially in the residential areas. But in this way, they cannot come even to the territory of Ukraine. They can be very safe at their own territory, but demolish as much as possible of the civilian infrastructure.
Can you tell us a bit more about what is happening in Kherson? Because we're hearing that Ukraine has launched a counteroffensive there. How are they doing in pushing Russia back?
First of all, it's necessary to understand that Kherson region is very long. It's maybe not so big, but it's very long because it is covering the whole territory, both in Azov and in the Black Sea, just above the Crimea. So the situation is very different on the different parts of this front line. However, definitely, because Kherson been under the occupation since the beginning of March, and it is very difficult situation in terms of human rights violations over there. Russians already arrested more than 500 people only in the city of Kherson, where the demonstration in March and April being almost daily of the, pro-Ukrainian demonstrations against the Russian-occupied forces over there. So as for now, Ukraine is trying to get village by village, road by road, a little bit of territories coming closer to the city of Kherson to have the possibility for the counterattack, but also to minimize the possibilities of the attack against Mykolaiv city, the next one after Kherson to the west. As for now, it's really step by step, very slowly, because the biggest forces are concentrated on the east. Kherson probably will be the next region as soon as the situation on the east will stabilize a little bit more.
Hannah, I really appreciate you speaking to us on Al Jazeera. Hannah Shalest, Security Studies and Program Director at the Ukrainian Prism.